Welcome to the Rebuilt Parish Podcast. I'm your host, Melissa Wilkinson, and I'm grateful that you're tuning in today. Two key elements of a great weekend experience include building layers of volunteer leaders and having exceptional opportunities for kids and students. Today in the studio, we've got Joseph Hale, coordinator for ministers in the Next Gen Department at Church of the Nativity. Joseph's role is all about recruiting, training, and empowering volunteer leaders. So join us and get ready to learn about how you can have a great weekend experience by growing layers of volunteer leaders. Hey there, Joseph. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, as minister coordinator at Church of the Nativity, specifically for Next Gen, can you tell us a little bit about that role and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have, you could say I have two big responsibilities, which is recruit ministers and train ministers. And how I go about that is, that's where all the fun is, an example. And so the best way for me to describe that is, far as recruiting ministers, is creating an environment where our ministers feel that their service is actually serving Christ.
Oh, that's so good.
And then the next thing is to remove as many possible roadblocks to serving as possible on our end. And so that's really where a lot of the key work comes into.
So these are your primary responsibilities then, recruiting and training ministers.
Absolutely.
So good. And Joseph, I know that we've got people that are going to be so excited to hear from you today, because the number one question we get asked on our workshops every week is, but wait, how do I get these volunteers? And since recruiting these volunteers is such a crucial part of having a great weekend experience, we thought, who better to have on than you, not just for that, but because another crucial piece of that weekend experience is having exceptional kids and students programs, and you play a key role in that as well.
Oh yeah, I love the Next Gen.
Well, so we talk about how building layers of volunteer leaders and ministers is crucial to an effective weekend experience. So this is the question everybody's going to want to know. How do you approach recruiting, training, and empowering volunteer leaders and ministers?
Do we have enough time for that?
I don't know. How about this? How about the Cliff Notes version?
The best Cliff Notes version is bring everything back into prayer and scripture. And so what I mentioned about letting our ministers, you have to treat your ministers as ministers. So before you even start recruiting people, what are you recruiting? And it sounds a funny thing, but am I recruiting a body in a room because I need to have the right ratio of kids per adults? And so I actually just need an adult. Or am I recruiting somebody who I'm trying to teach them how to have a developmental relationship with these kids so all of us can get pointed towards Christ? I treat both people very differently.
That is huge, because I can tell you right now, I've seen it where it's just a body in a room.
And it's easier to recruit bodies in a room, although bodies in rooms leave. And the way you treat a body in the room, for example, if I need a body in a room for ratio purposes or for whatever reason, if it's a standby, a door, anything like that, I don't want that body to ask questions. I got other things I'm doing.
So tell us how you look for those people that you can pour into and grow and develop so that everyone's growing towards Christ.
Yeah. And so the most effective way to look for them is as we have developed our tiers. So this is where going back to scripture comes into play. So in the book of Acts, Moses was exhausted. He was exhausted because he'd wake up in the morning and he'd listen to all the complaints. And his father-in-law, who was come up to him and said, this is what you're doing is wrong. And that's a big thing for someone who's speaking directly to God, hearing elsewise. That being said, you can't handle this all on your own. So you need teams of captains or judges, I guess, of tens, hundreds, thousands. And similar to what Nativity does with all of our ministries is we try to develop a similar tier structure. So if I have, I don't run the greeters, I'd stick with Next Gen, but you could say the greeter team. So there's a greeters at the 9 a.m. mass. Like that can be a single team. Our 9 a.m. mass week A or week B can be a different team altogether. And you can have leaders who run those things. So whoever's in charge of greeters overall is not worried about those nitty-gritty details. And because they've empowered other people to take on those steps. And so kind of having that tier system is tremendously effective. And then far as, well, who's the next best person to go into the next step? As I'm a staff, or as you get higher up in there, you meet with the people who are of those judges of 10, of those judges of 20, of those judges of 100. And like, hey, so-and-so is actually doing a great job. Like, I've seen a lot of commitment out of them. Oh, great. I'm going to put them on a list and follow up with them. And maybe they themselves want to be a captain for an 11 o'clock mass or a different time there. And next gen is slightly different because we are, depending on the ministry, we're recruiting small group leaders. So they're already a leader. But we have what we call coaches. And so coaches, similar to that system, they pour into the leaders themselves. And so if you have a problem running your small kid's small group, you talk to your coach, and your coach can give you effective strategies or step in. And the coach's job as a volunteer leader is to pour in just to the leaders. And so when we talk to them, I mean, they need to step out for whatever reasons. They're the first people I go to. It's like, hey, who do you think would be best to fill this role? Or maybe this year we need to have four coaches for this time instead of two because we've doubled the amount of rooms we have. And so listening to your volunteer leaders, but creating the space for them is the biggest one. A lot of parishes don't have space. They haven't vision cast enough where they can fill in those roles. And so because they haven't vision cast enough, this is an entirely alien concept to them. So,
right. Well, I was just going to say, this is mind blowing for some parishes. And I want to just take a moment to encourage these parishes. If you're thinking, oh my gosh, Joseph, that's great for you. That's great that Nativity can do that. But my goodness, we are so far from that. Mm-hmm. I just want to encourage them and say, it's still okay to cast that vision. In fact, do cast that vision, because you'll find that as you build on each one of these anchors and just build each little building block, it all adds up to significant change. And it's not going to happen overnight, having these layers of leaders, but it will happen. I've seen it in my parish, and I can tell you we're a much smaller deal than Nativity. But in learning through Rebuilt Coaching, we were able to make significant changes and build layers of leaders. And Joseph, something you said really stuck with me, where when you build those layers of volunteer leaders, that they're not then, so let's just say you've got a small group leader or a volunteer host minister who has an issue. They're not going straight to the top, right? They're not going straight to Father Michael saying, hey, Father Michael, can you help me with this? Right?
I think that's probably his favorite part of the very first rebuild book. Like, no, you can't find his email. Like, I had to do some research to find his email.
But that's the beauty of those layers of leadership that, and especially with volunteers, because they're giving their time, energy, and talent, and they're pouring into the parish, into other people. But then I love how you said that one layer of leaders you've got is then pouring into the volunteer ministers and small group leaders. And that is incredible.
Oh, yeah. And one of the best and easiest ways to start with that process is, like I said, once everyone has their common why we're showing up to serve whatever ministry we're doing, and I'm pointing at all the course Christ, the next step is relationships. And so all ministries should do this if they're not currently doing this, name tags.
Yes.
Like, and it seems like such a silly thing. Like, I'm an adult. Right? We've known each other for 6 years. Why do I need a name tag? Well, because that person doesn't know you guys, and right, they're on the out. And now we have ins and outs. No, let's get rid of the ins and outs. And then we just have our team.
Yes.
And our team, everyone has name tags. And then one unique thing with the Nativity is we're growing, is we have a lot bigger growing community. And so we are having a lot of new names, a lot of people from French Africa, a lot of people from the Philippines. And so the dialects and names are different. And sure. So my big emphasis on that point to ministers, especially with young kids who have come to our programs, and for myself too, is some of these names are difficult for me to pronounce.
Sure.
That's okay.
Yeah.
What's not okay is for me to give them nicknames or for me to give them say their name really fast or to act like it doesn't matter. So it's right. Awkward. It is absolutely awkward to, hey, repeat your name to me and go right. Back and forth and back and forth until I'm able to pronounce it adequately enough for them to be happy. But it teaches them that even though they're not local, for lack of a better term. They're just involved in our community because their names, their persons matter just as much as everybody else. And so as our community grows, that's also been a big push that we've had here is the Know My Name or Say My Name campaign.
Yes.
It was really cool.
And we know through research that saying somebody's name makes them feel seen and heard and included. And especially for a weekend experience, we want that for people. And I love that you're starting there with the name tags.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about that training piece. What does that look like?
So depending on the ministry, the training pieces are different. And so, like I mentioned, how we have the tier system, we allow leaders the opportunity. So we'll have you could say there's a general training that goes overall for specific ministries, what it takes to be a greeter, what it takes to be a host minister, and then continuous development. Those leaders, though, will have the opportunity to expand on that. For example, I'm a part of the prayer team here as just a regular minister, so I don't actually do anything, which is awesome. But our volunteer leaders of the prayer team have book assignments or book reviews, and we discuss this, and so we're continually diving deeper into that. And then with my next gen leaders, Daniel mentioned, he always mentions lead small. So we give that to our leaders for lead small. So from the top down, we give them the lead small book. We have a workshop or two every year. And then we try to facilitate just discussion groups for leaders, ideally with food. Food's a big part if you want to get leaders to show up. But
leaders are any volunteer ministers.
What was that?
I was just saying leaders are any volunteer ministers. We know that volunteers aren't free. And you're sharing with us some of the ways that we invest in those volunteers and volunteer leaders.
Oh, very much so. Yes. And the more you can invest in them personally, the greater impact that you have. You're creating a good way to think about it is as a minister coordinator or as someone who's working with volunteers, that itself is your own ministry. So a ministry for the ministers you need to have if you want your ministers to be good in their own ministries. As confusing that is. That's where you pour into them as much as you can. You pray for them. You be with them. You keep track of what you can know about these individual people because eventually it can get so big. And then that's where you have the tier system. And so I can't know all the details of what's going on at the kiosk ministry. However, Katie, who serves there, has four people underneath her. She knows everything about those four people.
Right.
And so I can come in and I can learn as I go about, but that tier system is very, very important to making sure everybody is heard, loved, appreciated. Because if you're not appreciated, you're not going to want to be a minister or recruit ministers. Because when we're talking about recruiting ministers, the best way to recruit ministers, there's two really great ways. My favorite way, because it involves the least amount of work for me, is follow-up.
Yes.
So pulled me from my small group and said, I'd be great at this. Or so-and-so, where do you think I could fit this? So people come to us to serve. I think Michael said it before, having great programs makes recruitment easier.
Yes.
Very true. I have a few programs that are much more difficult because we're still in the recruiting for them is difficult because we're still in the process of developing them.
Sure. Well, I think that's the big question that everybody has here is that how do I get them? So let's just say a parish might not have those people to follow up with yet. What other tips for recruiting do you have for them?
So far as if I was going to start a recruitment strategy, one is to give myself a why. So I don't need bodies in a room.
Right.
And now two, I need to give the positions a why. So if I'm going to start a greeting team, why do we need greeters? Can't people just walk in by themselves?
Right.
Oh, it has to do with the experience. Okay. Or the hospitality that we're talking about. All right. Well, let's make that the center. And then because we're giving these people a why to adopt. And so once they've adopted the why, even though they don't exactly exist yet, because I don't have the ministers yet, but then they have their why, I then expand to what needs to take place for them to start serving. So these people have not signed up. They don't even know about this yet. And so in our archdiocese, they have to go through child protection clearance. I assume every player does it something similar.
Yes.
And so what are the steps for that? What are the steps for follow-up? Because the idea is that when I finally make my push, they just have to get as little steps on them as possible.
Right.
So that's why I mentioned all the potential barriers. My job is to remove those potential barriers. So making the positions very clear. So I only need you to be the best darn greeter you can be, or the best kids small group person for a half hour on this Sunday at this time, or on a weekly commitment. So when people sign up, it's important to remember that our ministers have to do a cost benefit analysis, for lack of a better term. The cost of what it takes to serve. Now, there's always a cost, even if it's not a financial, it's some other time. If they're leading a small group, then there's definitely a lot of emotional costs as they pour into other people. They receive other people's problems. And that's difficult when you develop these relationships, but all relationships come at some cost. It's just fantastic and glory that we can have with them. And so once we have all this down, then we can make our push. And so, like I said, one great push is when people come to us. I love that.
That's ideal.
When we get into crunch time, whether it's Christmas or Easter, at the start of a new year, the most effective way to get a push is from the pulpit. Now, Michael likes to do an entire preaching series, so he'll start a few weeks in about nudging the idea until we have the big ask moment. But even if we have just a quick shout out at EndNotes, that's been effective in getting at least a few people to come over and ask a question to inspire. And so if they need to fill out an entire form, that's a barrier to them. However, if they text serve to 88877, they can do that while sitting in the pews, and then I have their information. I can follow up with them. And so the less they do, the easier it is for them. Or many parishes don't have texting set up. I've known parishes to put QR codes on the back of their pews, or if their guys are still using bulletins, put a QR code in the bulletin, and that way you can have people scan it at home at their leisure and share the link to sign up. And yeah, the less work they have to do, the more people you'll have that'll be interested. And from there, you can weed out or go through the process to have the most amount of ministers available.
Well, Joseph, I think that's so incredible what you've shared, because when you're showing people on the front end just how you're going to remove those barriers and make this as seamless and simple as possible for them, they're going to see that volunteering with you is also going to be simple, that you're not going to make them jump through hoops, only the necessary steps, and you're going to help clear any blocks that they might have.
Absolutely. And then the next step, once I have this list of people, so whether it's 10 people or 1,000 people, follow up is key. So I've been to campaigns, and even here where people have fallen through the cracks on my end, and it feels terrible when it happens, but I texted served to 88877 and no one ever got back to me.
Oh,
that could have been a great leader.
Sure.
You'll never know, or you'll find out 2 years from now, like, oh yeah, I was interested 2 years ago, but I never heard anything. And so that is the most important part of a recruitment series, is following up. And so following up can be, it needs to be multifaceted. And so the first one is, so these people have already expressed interest in serving. So it's not cold calls, although cold calls can be pretty effective too, if you know how to situate a cold call on a campaign. But once they followed up, you send their general email, and that'll get you to the next tier of people who are actually responding in dialogue, because some people have a movement of the spirit, or they're pressured by their friend elbowing them, the text 88877, but they actually have no genuine intention. So once you reach out to them, they can either let you know or they'll ignore it. So it takes a couple email reaches out. And so we use ministry platform. A lot of parishes use Flocknote or something along those lines. And that is effective to weeding out the next round. But if you have your people who've text at 88877, they've responded to your email stuff. So now I only have, let's say, 50 people who haven't responded to anything at all. Those people are still considered falling through the cracks for whatever reason. They haven't checked their email. So the next step there, I like to do, and now not every parish has the time to do this, is a phone call campaign.
Okay.
And so that is, it's practically a cold call. Like, hey, hi, my name is Joseph Hale. I'm from the Church of Nativity. We saw that you texted to serve, and we would love to get you here in the small group program and help you out here with this. We noticed you haven't responded to anything else. Is there anything we can do to help out, or another next step, or how interested are you? I mean, whatever that pitch is, I mean, you can keep it short and quick. It's helpful for me that I'm actually from Idaho originally.
Okay.
And so the reason being is because I have a 208 number. And if I didn't tell you about Idaho is 208, you'd have no idea where that's from. So people don't answer their phone.
Sure.
And so I leave a lot of voicemails.
Okay.
What's helpful is because I can leave a voicemail and move on to the next person. So I can actually get through 50 calls in in an hour or two.
Okay.
If I just do voicemail after voicemail.
Okay.
And then I send a follow-up email that's more personalized.
Okay.
So in my follow-up email, it'll be, hey, this is just a follow-up on the voicemail I left. And they're like, whoa, this person gave me a phone call and an email. Like, they really want, like, it just tells right. them how we want them to know. And so now if they don't respond back after a voicemail and a follow-up email, I can't say that they've fallen through the cracks or just not as engaged as we would hope them to be.
Sure.
But I've done everything in my due diligence to get them involved. And so that helps them reduce the amount of people who fall through the cracks, because even one minister here and there can make a big difference in the course of a year of how effective or how smooth a ministry is run.
Absolutely. And Joseph, what I'm taking from that is I want this to be encouragement to parish leaders out there that it's not easy. Right? We know that, first of all, parish work is not easy. It's hard work, but it's so worth it. But Joseph, tell me, is it worth it? All of this, all of the no's you get when you get those yeses?
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the best way to describe it is if I do a blanket email, I am going to get maybe 1 or 2% response. And most okay. of those responses will be no.
Sure.
If I do a phone call campaign, I'm going to get probably closer to 40 or 60 response, and most of those will still be no. So you hear a lot of no, and it can definitely put you down. But remembering your why. Why am I recruiting? I'm not recruiting a body in a room, because that's irritating to hear no from a body. You just have to stand there and do nothing. What I'm trying to recruit is a disciple to another group. So a disciple to small children, a disciple to teenagers, a disciple. And so I'm trying to recruit someone who's engaged and who's invested. Or
is your parish welcoming to outsiders? Are your pews full at every Mass? Do the homilies speak into people's lives? Is your music stirring? Are your kids' programs exceptional? Imagine this. Our rebuilt subject matter experts visiting your parish over the weekend. They're not just there to observe, but to engage, to encourage, and empower. A rebuilt weekend observation is a unique opportunity for your parish to receive personalized feedback, practical insights, and tailored action plans from the very best in parish renewal. Whether you're just starting your renewal journey or looking to take it to the next level, our experts are here to help. They're dedicated to helping parishes like yours thrive. During weekend observations, they'll be there to listen, learn, and lend a helping hand. Our experts have years of experience in transforming parish communities together. We'll work side by side with your leadership team, your staff, and parishioners to ignite the flame of renewal in your community. So, if you're ready to breathe new life into your parish, if you're ready to see real, tangible change, then weekend observations are for you. Book your weekend observation discovery call at rebuiltparish.com/observation. That's rebuiltparish.com/observation. We can't wait to spend the weekend with you.
Who's interested in being invested. It reminds me of the story about the father who brought the paralytic son to Jesus.
Sure.
Lord, I believe, help my unbelief.
Yes.
This is the response when Jesus says, anything's possible if you believe. Well, I believe in these ministers, but some of them don't believe in themselves yet. And so for them to take that next leap, I mean, that can, to me, that's an act of the Holy Spirit pushing upon them. That I've taken the next leap to text 888, said, I don't know why I did it. And I'm like, hey, we got all barriers removed. We are going to show you why you texted 88877 and why you're going on this way. And you're going to have a wild ride. And that's where my goal is, to show ministers how they can experience Christ through serving. And that's, if I don't have that as a goal, then everything I do is for naught, and I'd probably make more money doing something else.
Sure. But I love how you shared that you bring it back to the why. And that is crucial in recruiting volunteer leaders, volunteer ministers, whoever you're recruiting. Bringing it back to the why is so important. Now, you talked a little bit about encouraging and empowering your volunteer leaders. Talk to us a little bit about how you maintain cohesiveness, especially with a volunteer team of leaders.
Yeah, so having those leaders of 10s, 20s, 50s we talked about. And so cohesiveness comes from the top. In one form, as far as I guess for next gen, so we're talking about, let's say, our high school program. And so how am I ensuring that our small group leaders are doing the best at following the small group guides we have? And so having a coaching structure, but also giving them all the information they need ahead of time. And so for each week, I will send out to all our small group leaders what the small group guide is, a little note to keep them invested and so they can also continue to learn more, and then also what to look forward to. Their coaches will also send them a similar email. Maybe I'll have a little bit less information or a little bit more information that's more specific to serving in general. So it could be a challenge. And so they get at least those two emails. They have the opportunity to speak to their coaches, and the coaches and I have already discussed, so we're on the same page about what the next program or what the main push is. Then we'll huddle. And so what I find to be the most effective way to keeping people on the same page is prayer. I mean, it sounds silly. Like, we got so much to do. Kids are coming through the front door. We got, there's a problem with the screen. We got the lights going on here. Is the pizza here yet? It's serious problems.
Serious. I remember those days. Those are serious problems. Those it's really, all happening at one time.
Joking, but no, it's a serious problem if the pizza's not here yet and you have hungry middle schoolers.
Absolutely.
But taking that moment for everyone to come together, so we call it a huddle, and it is. It's just a group huddle. And, hey, here's what tonight's about. Here's doing this thing here. And then ending in prayer. Being intentional with those prayers, I find to be very effective. And so when I do say a prayer, I will ask the Holy Spirit to come upon all of us, remind everybody what our why is in that brief moment, that our leaders, that we will inspire, or we will be tools for the Holy Spirit to work through us into these kids, and then from these kids to go change their homes. And so it's that spark that causes the fire. And so doing that in just that 30-second prayer, plus tying it into whatever the message is about tonight. And so we're doing a message on wisdom right now. And so we're hoping that these kids will develop to be wise. They'll develop to be right action or right influence or whatever it is. And that sums up the purpose of why my ministers are there in 30 seconds or less, in the form of a prayer that they can then take with them. And so oftentimes I'll get complimented on the style of prayer that I have. I assume that's probably mostly from my, I'm a convert. And so I do pray a little bit differently, but it's organic to me. So it works out great.
Yeah.
But I'm summing that all up, keeps the, my why in the forefront always. Because as soon as you lose track of your why you have ministers, your why you have, everything's downhill from there. And so it's, it can be, you have to make an intentional effort to keep that why.
I love that you said that because, you know, again, bringing back to the why, but when people are being purposeful and intentional about it, they can see that bigger impact that they're having, that that time that they're spending with that group of kids, if they're a volunteer minister, that 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 time can go then and make a bigger impact on their home. And then from their home, then that can make a bigger impact on their community. And it's a continuous ripple effect. And it's incredible that you can do all of that in a 30-second prayer. Well, I love how you're talking about pouring into people. And I want to dig a little bit deeper into that, especially when it does come with the training and development for your volunteer leaders. So what kinds, you did mention, you know, some of them, but tell us a little bit more what you do to foster that. And maybe what are some of those details around how you train and develop those volunteer leaders?
So far as our by volunteer leaders, you mean volunteers who lead other volunteers?
Yes.
Okay. Daniel shared Lead Small with our kids programs. Far as volunteer leaders go, the best recruitment for those are those who already have experience in the ministry that they're leading.
Okay.
And so that allows them to already be in the right mindset of what their current people they are leading going through. And then, so for their continuous development of those leaders, now that they roughly know what they're talking about as far as speaking up to ministers. That volunteer, let's see, I'm trying to think here. It's a fantastic question. I guess their leadership skills would be to give them the opportunity to get uncomfortable.
Oh, that's so good.
And so like some of my leaders, our coaches, and stuff, you'll ask them to give a message because like, it's when you're uncomfortable, you have the opportunity to grow.
Yes.
So they may or may not be okay with that. And so a lot of times people like to be these leadership roles because it's more in the background. Right. So having them step forward at least gives them the chance to be uncomfortable, gives them the chance to grow themselves. As far as training for them, a lot of it is relational training. And so we'll have a meal together and it'll be all the volunteer leaders, everyone can share and discuss. And from there, we naturally grow by all of us having the same common goal.
Sure.
And then I've seen several programs come through. So There's not one that I specifically recommend or specifically stick, but there's plenty of volunteer leader programs, Disciple Makers, eKindles or Catholic Kindle or something like that. It's just one that's developed recently. And those are pretty neat. That's all I got. Okay. But I don't exactly have the best format for developing the leaders outside of their specific roles, unless we're talking about spiritually developing them. And so that involves them pouring into other people as well. So most of that, I feel, happens more organically.
Oh, that's so good, because that organic training then is what can happen when they're learning kind of in that role. So that's huge. Thank you. Well, Joseph, you mentioned that part of your job is removing some of those barriers to becoming a volunteer minister in some capacity. Can you tell us maybe what are some of the common challenges or obstacles that your volunteer leaders might encounter? Once they're in the role, I should clarify, once they're in the role, and then how do you support them in overcoming those challenges?
So once they're in the role, so they've already gone through the process and everything, a common challenge could be not having the material available on time.
Okay.
So if we have a small group program on Sunday, and I told you, like, I sent an email, they sent an email out too. And so I don't send my email out until Friday night, they don't have much to work off of.
Okay.
So that can be, like, those little things can be frustrating. So making sure they have the information available to them beforehand. Allow them the process, give them the opportunity to ask me any questions, ask Daniel any questions. All those things are very, very helpful. Other problems they have is knowing who and when to talk to. So they'll have a minister, especially as we had developed these relationships. Relationships can be very tough.
Yeah.
And so we've had ministers whose spouses have passed. We've had ministers whose children have passed. We've had ministers themselves pass. And then that affects the entire ministry team.
Sure.
Somebody's sick. Someone's getting divorced. I mean, there's real relationships come with real problems. And so how do they navigate that seems to be the biggest drain on them all. And so it's getting back to, well, we have a grief chat. We have Nativity's been awesome about having these programs available for them. We as a team have a collective prayer list so we can actually follow up with our individual ministers who struggle. Wow. And so that takes it off of some of the leaders sometimes. So I have Daniel and I and Marianne, we have an entire list, an Excel list we have, that this is the so-and-so minister, they were serving this capacity, this is what they're really struggling with, or this is what they're really praying for. And then we have a follow-up. So I try to take that follow-up on myself so my ministers don't have to.
Wow.
And so that helps them out a lot. So they'll naturally want to help out the best they can, but they don't have to worry. They have the ability to, it's being taken care of. As taken care of can mean at least this person's not being ignored.
Right.
Because then they want to share that with us. And then what can we do? Well, the biggest thing is prayer. And so we always tie things back into prayer. We specific prayers with them. We send cards, greeting. Sometimes we get Grubhubbed, or if we need to, it's okay to ask a minister to, hey, you might want to take a month off. You might want to take a year off, and that's okay. So you never should have a ministry that's so dependent on a single volunteer, no matter how awesome that volunteer is, or how important that volunteer is. They should always be able to step out.
Sure.
And there's lots of reasons why they need to step out, but setting things up so that they can step out and encouraging them to.
Right.
You got to listen to, I think, yeah, it was with Michael or you and Daniel. You had that episode recently on Next Gen. And Michael's example is a teacher who was burnt out after 7 years.
Yes, who didn't even really want to do it in the first place.
And so part of that's very real in parish ministry, is just because I signed up. Right? And now I feel bad because Catholics are great at Catholic guilt.
Yeah.
So letting people know it's okay to leave, let them leave before they get burnt out.
Right.
So that's also very helpful. Or in a leadership position, maybe they just need to be moved. Like, okay, you don't want to be a leader anymore. Let's move you to operations. Let's move you to somewhere else that you can still serve, or just step out altogether and making sure everyone's happy in the process. Because, yeah, parishes and people can put Catholic guilt on pretty darn tough.
Right.
And that does create some form of resentment. And we don't want
that. We don't want that.
What the goal is, as far as
ministry. Well, Joseph, you had so much gold in there and what you've been saying, and I want to try and just call some attention just to a couple of parts of that. So first, when you talk about relational ministry and how you're training your volunteer leaders and how to lead relationally, But I think the critical piece of that is that you and your leadership team, you, Daniel, Marianne, you're all leading by example when it comes to leading relationally. And I think that's crucial for any ministry, really for any job or leadership position anywhere, is that leading by example. And when you're showing that the person is more important than what's going on by pouring into them, praying for them, sending them dinner, encouraging them to take that time off that they need, you're bringing it all back to that why. And I also love how you said, don't make one person so important that your ministry can't survive without it. It shows that importance of building up those big ministry teams too, so that there's always somebody to step in so that person can get the relief that they need.
Absolutely.
Well, I would love to just talk a little bit about communication. And we know that communication, especially effective communication, is important in any ministry and really in everywhere. Tell us how you have found effective communication within volunteer leaders. What does effective communication look like for you?
For me, effective communication deals with response, getting the message across and having leaders actually respond to it. And so, as I mentioned earlier, emails are fantastic, especially sent from ministry platform or Flocknote. However, that's not the most effective because people can easily block those. They go to spam, sure. They get lost, or they can even opt out, because if you sign up with Nativity, you can get a lot of emails really quick, especially if you sign up for all the good that Nativity has. Well, now you're getting 17 emails a day.
Right.
It'll take long for you just like, you know, I don't want any more of them. Like, unsubscribe. Right. Spam, get rid of it.
Sure.
And so by the goal of having the message across, so the least amount of ministers who come up to me on Friday and ask, hey, what are we doing this week? You should have known that by now.
Right.
It still happens, but if I only have one or two of them do that, that's actually a great response. And the more ministers who show up already with extra supplies, with stuff, like, I read this here, but I want to tweak it here, and I think my small group needs this, that's a massive win.
That's incredible. So,
by having an effective response, is the people there, because some people, no matter what you do, will never read ahead of time.
Right.
So they might not be the best people to lead a small group for children.
Right.
Small group for students, but they could be great people for operations or for a different place. And then email response, individual email response, or knowing those people who need that extra little bit of help. So that could be even a phone call or a text message, or allowing them to respond, allowing them the access to me, at least saying, hey, sure. Joseph, what's going on for this weekend? I was confused about this. And so the follow-up right there is the follow-up within 24, 48 hours. As long as I'm able to keep my Fridays clear, that's the biggest thing for me personally.
Right. That's your Sabbath, right?
I'm not working. Yeah.
Right. Well, because you're working the rest of the weekend. Well, you mentioned text messaging, and I want to ask you, is that a platform that you're using consistently with your volunteer leaders and ministers?
I can set up text messages through ministry platform. So I think Flocknote has something similar.
They do. Yeah.
Okay. I've never used Flocknote professionally. And so, but that is a platform we use, especially with teenagers.
Sure.
And so knowing your age group, so adults, older adults, and teenagers operate very differently.
Sure.
There's nothing more frustrating than sending emails out to teenagers and getting no response because
they don't respond.
They all have them though.
Like, sure.
2024, every school requires it. And so I have to work with the groups that I'm dealing with. So
yep, it's about knowing which generation.
Sending text messages to them and the following up that way. And then also there's that barrier too of how you respond when you do send a text message to a teenager, making sure it's a group list and things like that.
Sure.
As well, and for us all to comply.
Yes.
So the way you respond to people in different age groups, different brackets, and knowing who you're responding to will affect the type of communication I send out. In general, I send out that minister minute, which is every week. So should take about a minute to read because I want to be respectful of their time. And I'll have links to everything they need to know for the weekend.
Nice.
And so I send those out by Thursday. The coaches will send out an email by Thursday or Friday with similar information, but it might be more specific to that. And then Saturday evening up to there, as well as into the week before, ministers have the time and are available to send me a text message, or I make myself available on the concourse Sunday.
Okay.
Because our student programs don't happen until the evening.
Okay.
So if I'm there at the kiosk, they can pull me aside and say, hey, Joe, what's going on here? And I can explain it to them 7 hours before our program starts.
Great.
So that's also helpful, but it's giving, allowing for multiple forms of communication to be acceptable.
Well, we have found that multifaceted communication is what works, because there is no one size fit all strategy for communication. You just have to find which style of communication that specific person or group of people respond to best. Well, Joseph, I think some people want to know, what advice would you have for someone who's just getting started with this? What advice would you give them?
The best advice to give somebody would be to pray and be specific in your prayer. And so when it comes to starting a new ministry, what am I thinking of? Well, I'm thinking of, I need 5 people for this position. Oh, I might need a few people for this. So I get an exact number of the ministers I need and exactly what they are. So as I start developing stage one, which is knowing what my ministers are doing, giving them their why. In that I can pray, because God, it's important to remember that these ministries aren't mine. Nativity is going to be around long after I'm gone.
Sure.
These ministries aren't Daniel's. These ministries aren't even Michael's. These ministries are God's ministries first. And so no one wants our programs to succeed more than God himself.
Right.
And so, but if I pray for God, please send me more ministers, and I get a minister or two, or I don't get anything. How do I gauge that God is actually listening? So when we do pray, it's important to give sometimes specific numbers, even if those numbers aren't met, but we're giving God himself a criteria to reaffirm to us that he's listening to us. Because guess what? He is. He is listening to you.
Right.
When you say, God, I just need more. Be specific. I need 10 ministers. If you can, or if you feel it's reasonable, I need 10 ministers in 2 months by on the December 36th or whatever. Not December 36th. But being that specific will allow God the opportunity. So once you see that, God actually listened. And then you open yourself up, because the less you put on yourself, the more you put on to God. Jesus speaks about that when helping him carry our burdens.
Right.
He wants you to succeed more than you want you to succeed.
Right.
But you have to be specific so you can see the success. If you're not specific, then you're always going to feel like you're drowning.
Oh, that's so good. Being specific, that's so important to just ask him for exactly what you want. I love that.
I'd say one of my favorite parts is our all-stars, so that's our kids ministry, 0 months or 6 months to 6 years old. We don't have a required like every week or every other week commitment, so we kind of fluctuate.
Sure.
And we don't know, that ministry is particularly difficult because we don't know how many kids are going to show up on any given Sunday.
Sure.
Some Sundays we can get as many as 140 kids. Other Sundays,
whoa,
it's 80.
Wow.
And so some masses, I'll have ministers stand around, and other masses will be swamped and we're calling in staff like, we need more help. And so the way I described it to some ministers, especially the people I work with who help me recruit for that or help me schedule, is because they'll look at it and they'll Tuesday night and like, we don't have enough. I'm like, it'll be okay. Trust in God, because God will give us exactly what we need.
Right.
However, it's hell on the nerves. He didn't promise it'd be easy, but that's one, I guess. Always trust in God, but it is absolutely hell on the nerves.
Right. Well, he didn't promise it would be easy, but he said it would be worth it. And, you know, you talked about having that trust. And as you bring him those specific prayers and trust in him, every time he answers those, whether it's answering them on the spot with as many as you asked for or just part of them, it just helps that trust and that confidence in him build. And that I think is huge in helping you grow as a leader as well.
Oh yeah. Well, Vilma, it builds up my why. Why am I needing these people?
Sure.
Because God actually exists. God's here. He wants to succeed. And I am a small part in his machinery and his work.
Right.
And so if you don't do that, and you can easily put that burden on yourself, then you get burnt out.
Right.
And then if you're a burnt out minister, burnt out minister recruiter, you treat people as bodies and you stop treating them as ministers, and the whole thing devolves.
Right.
So having a ministry campaign of any sort has to be rooted and centered in your why, and that has to be rooted and centered in prayer. And the second you deviate from that at all, things are going to start falling apart quickly. The nice thing is that just means that you need to force yourself into prayer again. I think it's a Mother Teresa who had a group of nuns. I think the story goes, they said they didn't have enough time for their charitable works to do an hour of prayer. And so she required them to start doing 2 hours of prayer.
Oh.
And because if you ever think like, what I'm doing is so important, I don't have time for that oneness of God. I don't have time to run in that adoration chapel. That's when you need to pray the most.
Right.
And that's where you trust in God. He'll figure it out. He wants you to succeed. But it's hell on your nerves, and that's okay. You can, God will help you get through it.
Right, right. Well, Joseph, I love how you started us in prayer with that everything starts from prayer, and you're kind of helping us wrap it up where, again, prayer is that focus. Another question I have for you is, Rebuilt has so many resources available. What resources could you recommend our listeners look for to help them with building up groups of leaders and layers of volunteer ministers?
Let's see. I do believe you guys have a leadership campaign team already. So the Rebuilt podcast, great one out of the weight workshops you guys been doing.
Yes. So
I believe you have an archive list. So if you sign up for Rebuilt, I don't know how you guys are platformed exactly, but you'll be able to look up in the archive. And then one I particularly recommend, and we only address this in one of our sessions, but it is kind of deals with the whole mindset, is there's a Next Gen Rebuilt course that Daniel primarily posts on. I hop in for a session about ministry, but that Rebuilt course kind of like helps us tie in everything about our programs and devolving with our why. But I do know that Rebuilt itself has quite a bit of resources on ministry and minister experiences, and then recruitment pushes and what that can look like.
Yes. And I'll link to those in the show notes. We've got some workshops in there. And then also you mentioned that Next Gen course, which that Next Gen course, you know that I was in that course. You were in there while I was taking it. And I remember when you were sharing. What's that?
You were in there twice, if I recall.
I was in there twice. Yes, I was in there.
You had a great, and then you came back at the beginning of another session.
I did. So our parish, I was helping to redo our Next Gen program. And then in full, like Tom Corcoran style, I then found my replacement. And then I brought her to the class, and I was in the class with her for that second time so that she could then get that training. But I have to share that that course is just soup to nuts, everything you need to know about launching and relaunching Next Gen in your parish. But that's only part of our coaching. And that's with becoming a partner parish with us. And so I'll link to that in the show notes as well. That's one of the best ways to go further, faster with us. But we also have so many other free resources. I'll link to some of those that you talked about in the show notes. Well, Joseph, is there anything else you'd like to share to wrap us up today about finding and embracing and, you know, just encouraging volunteer ministers?
The only thought that just came to my mind is when we were talking about communication earlier. And so one thing with email communications is absolutely the easiest form. We can reach the most amount of people. There is no voice in email communication. So this came from, this is the best advice Daniel gave me about my position. There's just no voice. So right. Thank you for serving today can sound like, thank you for serving today. Or thank you for serving today.
Right.
Oh, wow. And so when you write an email, go over the top. Exclamation points. We're so grateful you came here. We are incredibly blessed to have you. You had to put in more emotion than you would naturally into an email, just so that way you can convey even a little bit of emotion, a little bit of effect. So that way people, when they read it, they can't read it with that monotone voice, because whatever their position is at. And so that's the last thing I have for you, just occurred to me, that might help somebody out there who's listening to this now going, that's how I communicate with people.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Oh my goodness. Well, Joseph, thank you so much for joining us here today. We are so grateful and blessed that we got to have this time with you. I know that everyone is going to love that they get to learn from you in this episode. And thanks for all that you're doing to encourage and empower the next generation and all of those volunteer leaders and ministers at Nativity.